This is my mess. For your own sake, stay clear. There's no sense in us both being dragged through the mud.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 28, True Fibs. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Before we get into this splendiferous episode featuring even more moving of chess pieces before the finale in 17 weeks or whenever this finally ends, we have an announcement about Again With This episode 80 that drops January 21st. Let's watch The Road to Fame, : The Stars of Melrose Place and Beverly Hills 90210! That is on YouTube. We will link it. We hope you will join us. And to join us for that exegesis and everything else that we've done before, we had 80 episodes, you guys. There's a
That's
lot of fun.
That's what I say when I stub my toe. Exegesis! When you started saying that title, I'm very, very tired and kind of sick at the moment. I just heard The Road, and I thought you were going to talk about the movie The Road, based on the post-apocalyptic book of the same name.
Yeah, the remake starring Brian Austin Green.
I was trying to figure out who was in it. And all that in the microsecond between Road and whatever word happened next, that's where my brain went. So I'm going to go lie down now.
I mean, now okay. I have to look and see if we actually could do it, because it seems like it's not impossible. But Dave, you... While I do that, you talked over the URL of our Patreon, which is patreon.com/againwiththis. All right, scanning. All right. This feels like something David Bowie, a.k.a. Donna Stalker, could have been in.
Yeah, it seems like maybe Chris Williams might have been in it.
Nope, not seeing him. Michael Kenneth Williams is in it. Cody Smith McPhee, speaking of three namers. But yeah, no, not seeing anyone that we could claim, sadly.
That's a shame.
That would be a slog, wouldn't it?
It really would.
And then they eat the baby.
Yeah. Well, spoilers. Jesus. Yeah. Sadly, until Viggo Mortensen works with Darren Star, we can't do it.
I don't know if that's in the movie.
We can do Soap Dish, though. Will we? Go to Patreon and find out. We could. Paul Johansson.
Oh, that's right. All right. Let's talk about this. True Fibs. Starting with our E plot. E. Yes, you heard me right. Sydney and Bobby are in the movie business now? ? As Sydney searches the paper for white collar jobs Bobby could possibly do, he reminds her that he has a job. She complains it's not a career. I think being an airline mechanic is a pretty good career, actually. It's a union job.
Seriously, it's a trade.
Yeah. Anyway, that's immaterial. Bobby likes it, is his point. But they can't argue about this further, because then there's a real smooth smoothie at the door looking for Bobby. He is a former associate. His name is Jimmy Stanley. He is now a movie producer. Bobby is not happy to see him. Jimmy claims it isn't like it was when they were kids. Now he's totally legit, and he can get Bobby in on the ground floor of his new production. Bobby is not interested and physically throws him out, like Uncle Phil throwing Jazz out the door on Fresh Prince, over Sydney's protests. And Jimmy says where he's staying if Bobby changes his mind. But when he's gone, Sydney insists it's a golden opportunity, and she kept Jimmy's card. So no one is surprised when we see Sydney again having lunch with Jimmy, apparently behind Bobby's back. He's made 10 successful movies already, and a $15,000 investment gets them a return of $75,000. And they'll both get producer screen credits at the start of the film. And Sydney immediately writes a check for that amount, specifying that her name should go before Bobby's in the credits, you know, alphabetically. And Jimmy regards the check and exposits that she's written it on the medical practices account. So this is the second time she's done this. She also did it to bail Bobby out. So, I mean, I assume there is going to be chickens coming home to roost on this, but we'll see, I suppose.
Yeah. Ooh.
Anyway, she lies.
Texas,
that it's
Texas, Texas, Texas.
I just meant not even that. I just meant her getting in trouble with Michael and Peter when they try to like buy equipment or something and they're overdrawn.
Yeah, it's like, we needed a respirator. You paid for, well, you'll see. I mean,
right.
I have to think you're right because they showed us the check both times.
Twice. So. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Sydney lies that it's just a loan out corporation and Jimmy decides to believe her because, you know, he wants the money. And then some number of days later, we get some movie studio B-roll that is so old, there is a visible scratch on the footage. I made a GIF. It's in the visual aid.
I know.
It's crazy. And then Sydney sneaking onto the set, asking Jimmy for her chair. And he claims the actors prefer only to have one producer on the set at a time, so he'll just call her when they're wrapped. But she's already claimed a chair and parks her butt next to Jimmy to start going over her notes on the script. Clip two.
Are you aware that some of these scenes have no endings? For instance, this one right here, where the cop comes to help the woman who's been burglarized. After he checks out her bedroom, the scene just stops.
Okay. Come on now, Sydney.
I didn't get it until this point either, possibly because whatever. Like, I have stopped really paying attention to Sydney plot lines except to, like, see what she's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And it has gotten less bonkers, I'm happy to report. But it's like, oh, Sydney. Like, hashtag, oh, Sydney. So that I was like, oh, hilarious. But this is sort of what I was saying in a previous episode about, like, mid-90s transgressive culture.
Right.
That might have been in a Patreon episode, but it's like, this is, I feel like this is absolutely something that all nighttime soaps, like, wove in. I mean, 90210 did it too.
Yeah.
With Steve being the pizza guy in a porno at their house. Like,
yes.
And it's like, ha, because, you know, mainstreaming of, like, okay, there's a lot of issues there, and they're above all of our pay grades, but, oh, Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
This did make me laugh, though, because I wasn't thinking what the upshot was going to be, and then I was like, oh,
yeah,
gotcha. The scene just stops. They played that pretty well. This is dumb and a waste of time, but well done for that, so.
Well, they also, like, they do sort of conceal it when we see that they're shooting at a studio and not just in, like, someone's house in...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although the fact that what's his face, Jimmy Stanley, looks like he borrowed his clothes from Andy Dick should have been an immediate tell, but it wasn't.
It really should
somehow.
Have. So Jimmy hilariously says about her script note that the director likes to improvise a lot and says it keeps things fresher, like a Woody Allen movie, which, like, oh...
Oh.
Okay. Ooh.
Yeah.
Just then they start rolling.
It's a soap job, but it's pretty bad.
So that's when they start rolling on the scene that Sydney's referring to, and she gets it because it's porn. It's porn, everybody. Mm-hmm. And end of plot line. On to the D plot. Billy finally figures out he's not a villain. Billy enters Allison's apartment in the morning without knocking, carrying coffee. Needs her help with a pitch to online bank. And at first I thought I heard that wrong, but I didn't. We'll get back to it. This is also when Allison finds out that he and Amanda aren't boning anymore because Billy was just a stepping stone to Amanda's contract renewal, and he quickly changes the subject back to his pitch. Clip three.
So do you know anything about online bank or not?
It's just called online bank. That's how long ago this was. Like... There's one bank. It's the bank that's online. Online bank.
Want to go get some groceries at Food?
This is like the first time I visited you guys, I think, and you kept referring to the beer store in Canada, which I was like, oh, haha, it's just they call it the beer store.
Well, then
but
we
it's
got
called
there.
Like, I don't know, O'Malley's.
No,
it's called the beer store.
The beer store. Oh, okay.
Wow, Canada's kind of the best. Into it. Mm-hmm. Good for SEO. Well done.
It's true. Anyway, Allison says online bank is not impressed by Flash. I assume that means they don't use Flash, LOL. So if Billy doesn't know his data points, he should reschedule the meeting. And he snits back condescendingly about her new job. And though she doesn't need to, she advises him to get Amanda's files or else he's going to get fucked. And in gratitude, Billy tells Allison to have a nice minimum wage day, which, like, she's a tipped worker. It's actually probably less than that. Nice, Billy.
Yeah. Also, you used to drive a cab. Seriously, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, honestly. So then it's the meeting and we see a sign and learn that literally the online bank is just called online bank. There's a sign. Mm-hmm. It's in the visual aids.
I mean, they must be so good at the cyber.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone is saying it. Mm-hmm.
So Billy decides to show off like a big man by bragging on his titles, some broad at reception and telling her to hit him up for a job. And then Roland Marks, the president of online bank, comes out to get Billy. The entire management team is assembled. And then Roland stops almost immediately to ask where all of Billy's materials are because he has nothing. And Billy has his entire pitch up here, his hair. I mean, I think he means his brain, but but I don't. And we don't hear the whole pitch, but when Amanda runs into a mopey Billy at Shooters later, we do learn that it sucked ass. Clip 4.
Online man, superhero of banking. Clients are still laughing, Billy.
Well, they're idiots. They don't get it, right? They have no idea about what's here and now.
They came up with this year's most revolutionary concept in banking. They are the here and now. So aren't you interested in what our bosses had to say about your little performance?
Not really. I'm sure they don't expect me to have a perfect batting average.
You're off the account. I'm on. So much for your Midas touch.
I could get them back, you know, if I wanted to. But it's a stupid account. Nobody's gonna bank on a PC unless it spits out 20s.
Well, that rationalization may make you feel better, but I wouldn't count on getting a raise anytime soon. Amanda.
Hello.
What can I get you? Nothing. Thanks to Billy, I'm totally satisfied. Good night.
What was all that about?
You really want to know?
No.
Allison, aren't you so much happier?
Oh my God.
She seems like, I just love that her capper's on every scene. It's like, so the thing is, she's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yes.
I got a table.
And I know this is just resetting to let the new viewers know, like, they all used to work together and now they don't. And Allison is fine with it, but it doesn't matter. I love it every time.
Yeah. Every no, time. Same.
Like, she's so much better. Let me.
Do you really want to know? No. Orders up. It's
yeah.
Fine.
So she asks if Billy wants another beer, and Billy is a bitch about it. Clip 5.
No, I don't need a damn thing at all. Not from you or anybody.
Ew. Shut up.
Yeah, please.
Anyway.
Please shut up.
Apparently his humiliation at online bank was such that he had to really take stock in his life. And the next day he takes his fucking t-shirt and suit look to the graveyard to talk to Brooks Headstone. Clip 6.
Stopped loving you and you ended up dead. Maybe I've tried to make up for that by keeping you alive. By becoming all the things that I thought you were.
I mean, this is the tone of voice. He's like, I stopped loving you. And then you died. Like,
yes.
But then he's sort of like, so then I'm making a left on La Cienega. And the tub cap just falls off. Like, but this is not how you have these conversations.
No.
Also, you know what? I give up. I really do. I should not gig this for anything because I don't appreciate the subtext becoming text. I don't appreciate people like praying aloud at gravestones so the TV viewers can tell what's allegedly going on in their heads.
Terrible.
The attire is terrible. Everything about this is terrible. The tone is terrible, but this arc is over.
Mm-hmm.
Hallelujah. Let us not, you know, we come not to praise this plot line, but to bury it at last.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
It's done. We don't have to get into how Billy's whole impression of Brooke and her deal was absolutely inaccurate because he just leaves his wedding ring on top of the stone and says goodbye. And that's it.
Bye.
Bye. On to the C plot. Joe learns about child abuse. As Joe unloads Lori's luggage at her new place, Lori thanks Joe for all her help. Joe offers to continue watching Tyler since the place isn't furnished yet. Lori says they'll be fine. And then Joe brings up the bruise. And Lori shrugs that little boys are always bumping into things. and tells Tyler to say goodbye to Joe, and Joe and Tyler wave at each other for like 500 years. You can see it. I made a GIF. It's in the visual aids.
And it's actually a short film. We've submitted it for consideration for an Academy Award.
Yes. Dave, did you have something to add? Or has the moment passed?
I was just laughing at the tone of, he learns a lot about child abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got a lot to think about.
Yeah. It's like you're warming up for Don Pardo or something.
Well, that's kind of how the show treats
starring
the plotline,
child
honestly.
Abuse.
Yay!
So that night, Joe practically pounces on Matt to ask what she should do about Tyler. And he cautions that a false accusation can be as harmful as a real case of abuse and that she should talk to an expert. And he mentions a prof of his, not one he knows well, and Joe begs him to talk to this guy for her. Meanwhile, over dinner with Lori and Tyler, Sydney comments that she could never be a single mom, and Lori, in front of Tyler, though he seems oblivious, says it can be a drag sometimes, but that Joe's been a real godsend. And Sydney says Joe's working out her guilt and tells Lori Joe's whole backstory, not just that she gave up her child, but, you know, killing Reed, etc. Lori is shocked. And Sydney then high-fives Tyler over her suggestion of splitting dessert. Clip 7.
Kids are kind of sticky, aren't they?
I mean,
they are.
Hilarious. They are. It's true. This adult is also rather sticky, so justice for Tyler. But first of all, they have banana splits at Shooters. Mm-hmm. I would not order that. It's like, you know, filet mignon at the diner.
Right.
Bless your hearts. No, thank you. Mm-hmm. And then there's a super weird zoom in on Lori at the, like, in part of this scene that's like, I think it's supposed to be like, hey, schemey, but it's like very fast. And it's not the only time this happens.
Yeah.
In this episode, that it's just like someone totally lost control of the camera.
Yeah.
And then they just didn't fix it. So cool. Good job, everyone. Glad we're filming three of these a day.
Seriously.
Like it's a porno.
So over to the hospital where Matt tries to catch up with Dr. O'Malley after class, and Joe chases after both of them. And Dr. O kind of directs his comments to Joe's boobs, as you can see in the visual aids. I promise you it's true. As he says she has the time it'll take him to get to his car. And after she tells him the whole Tyler saga, he's very dismissive. His guess is she watches too much daytime TV, and she screeches back at him that a child's life is at stake. And as she's stomping off, Dr. O stops her and offers to let her bring Tyler to his office, which, like, you can't take someone else's kid to the doctor unless you ran over them and it's urgent care. Like, that's not, it's not
unless
done.
Unless you ran over them. I love that this is where your mind goes. Not just that, like, they got hurt or run over by someone else, but
okay,
you ran over them. They got run over by anyone else, just call them a cab.
They got run over by anyone else. It's anyone else's problem to bring them to the doctor, in my opinion. No. Unless the child is, like, in your care and something catastrophic happens. You can't just
I knew what you meant. I just thought it was funny that the way you phrased it, unconsciously or not, was like, unless you backed over the little fart.
All right, look, I've never run over a kid. However, one time before I knew about the hands on noses thing of when you're closing a door with a kid in the car. Are you familiar with this? To make sure, I once accidentally closed a kid's finger in a door, in a car door.
Oh, God.
They were fine. It was like barely, but still, it's a mistake you only make once.
Mm-hmm. I never heard that rule.
Oh, it's not a rule, but it's just a like, yeah.
Oh, that's no, it's smart. Mm-hmm. Might explain why I wound up with my finger stuck in a Dodge Dart door that they did not realize it. I was screaming. It was a thunderstorm.
Oh,
they're backing down my parents' driveway. I'm running alongside it.
No!
This story was being told as hilarious like 20 minutes later, but at the time it was not hilarious.
No, that's scary.
Mm-hmm. And yet still better written than any of this. So
it's
let's
true.
Just get it over with.
Yeah. Well, so Joe flirtily asks Dr. O to be less of a jerk with Tyler than he was with her. And he seems intrigued by her moxie or something. And the next day, Joe shows up at Lori's door just as Lori is yelling at Tyler again, this time about making a mess. Lori tries to act normal as she lets Joe in, Tyler standing in the corner. Lori cheerfully says Tyler's been a bad boy today, and when Joe comments that his shirt is dirty, Lori says she's teaching him a lesson about messing up his clothes. And Tyler agrees that Tyler doesn't like it when mommy's mad and takes off, slamming the door. Joe just wanted to see how things were going, and Lori says, great, she's even been on job interviews, and Joe continues judging. Clip 8.
So who watches Tyler when you're gone?
Oh, the girl next door. She's an exotic dancer and works nights mostly.
Are you serious? You trust someone like that?
Well, why shouldn't I? She's nice, and I know where she lives, and she's cheap.
Well, the next time you need a sitter, call me. I don't think a stripper is the appropriate babysitter for Tyler.
I don't think it's appropriate for you to be going off on personal exotic dance liaisons in this fashion show.
Yeah. Also, no one asked you, and maybe Lori doesn't think a manslaughterer is an appropriate choice to babysit her child. Just saying.
Seriously.
Anyway, Lori needs someone on call, basically, and Joe says she will be for Tyler, which, again, red flag! You have known this child. 3 days.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, Lori calls her bluff.
Mention, the way they're writing him is both like he's a 3-year-old or he's a 13-year-old.
Yes.
Or
yes.
He and Lori just met. Like, none of this really lines up. Like, this just seems like it's too late in this show's run to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
To be doing this.
Yeah, don't bring kids. We don't want kids. No one's interested.
They're sticky.
They're so sticky. Sarah, they're so sticky. When you have to hold a kid's hand to cross the street, it's like, why do you feel like this? This is wrong. Really not covering ourselves in glory, by the way, with the responses, Tyler plotline. Maybe just me. Maybe mostly me. Anyway, Lori calls Joe's bluff on the babysitting, which is lucky because then it allows Joe to bring Tyler to meet Dr. O'Malley. Who says Tyler shows no symptoms of child abuse, either physically or based on the way he describes his mother verbally.
And the way he's being written, I understand why he reached that conclusion, but
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And when Dr. O'Malley can tell that Joe looks disappointed, he reminds her that it's good news, but she disagrees because there could still be a problem of some kind. And he reminds her of his expert status, but she doesn't care how many cases Dr. O'Malley's seen. He can't make that judgment on a 10-minute interaction. And Dr. O'Malley thinks Joe should find another outlet for all this passion, like maybe meeting a guy and starting her own family. And she looks at him like he's a dick, because he is. And this is also how the show is putting its thumb on the scale about her, you know, being right to continue pushing despite all of the objections of the medical infrastructure, blah, 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 because this guy's a pig.
Right.
But, like, back off. You're creepy. But she says if he's not passionate about Tyler's well-being, then maybe he's in the wrong line of work. And the next day, Lori shows up at Joe's to yell at her about taking Tyler to a doctor without her permission, which, honestly, fair.
Yeah.
She doesn't care about Joe's concern. Tyler's her son, and there's nothing wrong with him. Lori is a very good mother, unlike Joe. And Joe's like, what? So Lori has to repeat what Sydney told her about, you know, everything. And Joe
is in full Bray mode, by the way. And that's where you really sort of see the resemblance between Los Priestley.
It's true. Anyway, her conclusion is Joe's the one with the problem. Joe is obsessed with Tyler and needs to stay away from them. And I get it. She does seem obsessed.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for the C plot. Next, we have our B plot. Richard's heel turn gets healier and...
Yeah, this is some dark shit that we're in right now, and I don't like it.
No.
I do not like it.
And content warning, there is sexual assault in this plot line, so...
Yes.
Feel free to skip ahead.
It's also, I regret to inform everyone, some of the more credible acting Patrick Muldoon has done. I don't feel good about saying that, but...
No.
Here we are.
But barf. I don't disagree. So Jane is sitting on her living room floor sketching when Richard shows up. He says she can't avoid him forever, especially when he has Humphreys, the biggest retailer on the East Coast, on the hook. They're going to fly out to Manhattan and pitch them. Jane wants Richard to take the meeting on his own, but they want to meet the designer. So she admits she's not sure about traveling together. So he offers to book them in different hotels, on different flights, and stay away from her except for meetings, which all sounds like the makings of a business partnership that's going to be very productive and healthy, by the way. Like, if this is your baseline, just stop. Like, this is not how work works.
Yeah, no. Like, you need to be work spouses, and you couldn't be real spouses, so maybe just don't.
Yeah.
Do that?
No. Yeah. Anyway, he says booking this account is his only concern and should be her only concern as well. And so she finally agrees. But before he can make the call to book their travel, she's like, just so you know, this is a business trip. And he's like, I get it, but the score feels differently. And the next day, Jake comes to see Richard at the office he still has. We watched him packing that shit up over more than one episode. Mm-hmm. Like, there were mannequins knocked over in the lobby, but now he's back in his office and we can hear other people, like, on the phone around them. Like, are we supposed to think that Jane's business is so successful that he was able to move back in? Because I don't.
No, me neither.
Anyway.
Or maybe it's just like some other business. And they were just like, well, he'll leave eventually. Let's just let him have his process. Or it's like, what's his name? Like, they keep in Office Space with the stapler and they keep trying to fire him. Milton. And then it's just like, it's Milton, whatever. And he's like, but I don't want the mannequins. I don't know.
But the sign is still out front, too. The Burns and Mancini sign is still in the front. Or not Burns and Mancini, sorry. Mancini and Hart.
Oh my God. There's so many Mancini-nines.
It's too much. Anyway.
The season has got to end. There's just too much going on.
It's true. Wrap it up. Some of these people got to go. Mm-hmm. Speaking of whom, Richard assumes Jake is there to be possessive about Jane. And he understands that Jake and Jane are together, but eventually Jane will need intellectual stimulation, which she will. And then where will that leave Jake? But Jake slams Richard into the wall and says he's on to Richard. If he messes with Jane's head, he'll kick Richard's ass. Which, like, guy, this was your idea. He was out. You were the one who brought him back. So, like, you can't do this now.
No, you really can't.
I mean, you can, but it's dumb. And then Jane and Richard are in New York, the former giggling about Richard convincing her to get that second bottle of wine. But they had to celebrate their $1 million in new orders. She finally agrees with him that they make a good team, but just as he's moving toward her, the phone rings. It is Jake. And Jane is excited to tell him all about their day. And Jake, trying not to freak out with jealousy, comments that Jane couldn't stand Richard last week, and now she's drinking champagne with him at 1 a.m., and she pushes back in clip 9.
Jake, why are you acting like I've done something wrong?
I'm not. I'm just saying.
I had the biggest sales day of my life, and you're giving me grief for having a couple of drinks?
Well, I'll save my congratulations until you're sober. So, bye. Give my best to your drinking buddy.
Actually, Richard's right here. Why don't you tell him yourself?
Oh. Does that mean you don't have any clothes on?
Oh, Jay, go to hell.
For real, like,
fucking A. Also, good drunk acting by Bissette there.
I agree. I thought she was very good. Mm-hmm. And her voice
gets
throughout
this episode, alas,
yes,
for her, not agree. Easy.
So Jake is just downed a shot when Allison appears behind him asking about his drinking on the job, and he tells her about his girlfriend getting drunk in a hotel room with her ex, which not quite the case, but sure. And Allison defends Jane, saying she loves Jake. Jake says that may be true, but she needs Richard. And then we get to the bad scene. In the hotel room, Jane bitches to Richard that Jake doesn't trust her. He thinks Jane deserves better. Richard does, that is. She ruined his whole career and he still trusts her. And he starts playing with her bangs. And when she bats his hand away, he grabs her by the arm and repeats that she deserves someone better. She tells him to let go of her and he doesn't. And she pushes him. And to keep it brief, he rapes her. And then it's the next day.
That did not need to go on that long. But to me, that wasn't even the most upsetting exchange with this, which we'll get to in a second. Mm,
yes. So after some classic ancient New York B-roll the next day, we rejoin Jane as she's getting out of the shower. And I'm kind of shocked they didn't do the assault survivor sitting on the floor of the shower as it tries and fails to wash
I fully expected it also
clean.
And was gratified that they skipped it.
They did. But as she's barely started getting ready, Richard opens the door and says they have to go soon. He ordered her room service and came in with the waiter. Yuck. And she tries to kick him out while he acts like everything is normal. And when she says he raped her, he denies it, claiming they made love like they used to.
And yeah.
Horrifying.
And she's like, I'm calling the cops. And he basically gaslights her and is like, nobody would believe you.
Right.
And here are the reasons why. Mm-hmm. He's not wrong. Probably still to this day. Never mind 25 years ago.
Right.
And
yeah.
And
the reasons are she invited him up after they had been drinking together. She had a fight with her boyfriend on the phone and he was there like, we just had sex.
Yeah. It was revenge. This is what you would have to explain to the cops. And then he's like, pull yourself together. There's customers waiting. And Muldoon is really, really gross.
Yeah.
Like convincingly gross. And I am sad for us all that this is where he finally started hitting it on the sweet spot acting wise, because it is not like we don't want this either. Like machinations, fine. Mm-hmm. Sexual assault.
Yeah.
This was a little too real for the, you know, frothy soap stuff.
Yeah.
But
indeed. So he leaves and she sobs once he's gone. And then Jane is back in L.A., opening her apartment door to Jake and asking to talk to him later. He thinks she must still be mad at him. She doesn't want to get into it. And as she starts to close the door, he pushes it back open, which don't do that. Just don't do that.
Ever, regardless.
And the way she plays this scene where she's just like trying to avoid his gaze as much as possible and just looking so down. Cast and sad and mad is very good acting by her. And so Jake then attempts this apology. Clip 10.
Look, I probably shouldn't have said what I said on the phone, but you had Richard in your hotel room. You were drunk. I got jealous, all right? I'm sorry.
Jake, I asked you to stop. I expect you to stop.
Stop what?
Leave me alone, all right? Just go away!
Jane, what's gotten into you? Why are you acting like that?
I'm sick of it! Okay, I'm sick of you! I'm sick of all of you!
Fucking A.
Yeah. So he looks completely confused. Inside, she sinks to the floor crying, and she really just does great in this plot.
Yeah. And again, a pity that she had to, but everyone involved is quite convincing and credible in this plot, which I'd still hate.
Speaking of rape plots we hate, our A plot, Terry seeks vengeance on Peter and Michael.
What is happening in that writer's room that it's just like, it's navy blue from here to the end?
Honestly, get another idea, guys. Have someone kill someone.
Well, and then the fluffy part is porn.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, let's just get this done.
Let's start so we can finish, as we say. So Michael comes raging into the lounge of the hospital because everyone's saying they're getting sued. And Peter says Terry is actually only suing him, and we know why. Michael starts panicking. Terry doesn't have proof, does she? And Peter says a maintenance man saw the little tramp with someone on the beach, which we now know Brandy is 17, and we previously knew she was being coerced into having sex with Michael by her monster mother. So let's not use that term, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, the guy only saw Brandy, not her partner. And Michael says they probably just want money, so he'll totally pitch in. Peter tells him to stay out of Peter's mess. Michael will at least help Peter find a lawyer, but Alicia has already volunteered, which I guess this was the kind of law she practiced when we first met her, but you hate each other? Like, what?
It's also not Sicily, Alaska. Please get another lawyer.
Yes.
Jesus.
Please. Anyway. Isn't she running a cable company now? Like, how does she have time?
I don't know.
Just then, Brandy calls for Michael. She has nothing to do with the lawsuit, and she really liked Michael, and Michael doesn't care who's responsible. Brandy has to drop the charges, is what he says, even though, as we said in the last episode, civil suit, charges, not the same. And that's when Terry appears on Brandy's side and takes the phone to hear Michael's threats about going to the cops himself. and says if he does confess to the police, she's going to talk to his lawyer and his wife and reads him the inscription in his wedding ring to let him know that she has it. She thinks he should let Peter take this one because Peter does not have nearly as much to lose as Michael does. Which is true, I guess. Sometime later, Amanda finds Peter at the hospital to apologize for her reaction to Terry at the end of the previous episode, and he replies thus, clip 11.
You practically accused me of statutory rape.
Okay. They're in the middle of a busy hallway, and he is talking so loud, but also, given where they ended it, like, we needed a scene of Amanda deciding for some reason that she believed Peter, you know?
Yeah. I mean, did she get home? She was like, that sandwich did look pretty good. Like, what? What is the thought process? Like, I understand that it's Jack Wagner and right. that he was toting a sandwich throughout this whole misbegotten plot line. And
sure.
like, we understand, but we need to see her understand.
Yes.
I agree.
How did she arrive there? We don't know, but whatever. She's there now.
On rye is how.
So Peter says his attorney's advising him to settle, and Amanda's like, your attorney doesn't know you then, and he has to say, she does, it's Alicia. But she says Peter's innocent, so he should fight the suit, and he makes her repeat that she really believes he's innocent, and she does, without question. And then he pouts that he needed her the other night, and then stomps off. And then Kimberly's in bed reading a book titled Multiple Personality Disorder in Giant All Caps.
I mean, it's kind of, and it's like a royal blue book.
Yes.
Why don't you just go whole hog and design a pamphlet that says multiple personalities and you, mm-hmm. parenthesis, and you. I'm sorry to joke. I shouldn't. But if they were going to play this for laughs, I have no choice.
I agree.
That it was low-hanging fruit.
It was.
Hit me in the face.
So then Michael enters with chicken soup. This is the pretending she has a cold method of getting through the DID. Mm-hmm. She hides the book, and when he finds it, she claims she's reading it for work. And he sternly tells her she's supposed to be resting, and also clip 12.
And aren't these Sybil cases a little out of your league? I mean, those people are way too far gone for ordinary therapy.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that if someone is made aware of the problem and if they're willing to work through it, then I think that...
Nothing short of a permanent stay in a nut house can help.
This person graduated from medical school, just a reminder. Like, I know he's a surgeon, yeah. which is non-credible enough, but like... Enough with terms like nuthouse. Like, I guess I don't get to talk because I just did the and you joke, but like, he would never talk like this.
No. Not if we're supposed to think that they've both turned over a new leaf and now they have a successful marriage and they respect each other.
Like, yeah.
She's studying to be a psychiatrist.
Right. That too.
Anyway, then he feeds her soup and. Like, if she can hold a book, she can lift a spoon. Like, this is weird. Don't feed people.
And also, that spoon is a tureen. What is happening on the set?
It's very big. So she changes the subject to the Miss Tarzana thing, and he evades the question and then says he's not perfect, but he loves Kimberly, and they both need to find it in their hearts to forgive each other's failings, and she certainly agrees. So put a pin in that. Terry is then about to stomp out of a lawyer's conference room when Peter and Michael enter late. Peter comes in hot, insulting Terry through her lawyer, so Alicia has to tell him to shut up and let her handle it. And what she does say is that even though Peter didn't do anything, he's going to offer Brandy $200,000. But Terry doesn't think that's enough to compensate what this pedophile did to her daughter. And while Brandy looks lasciviously over her shoulder at Michael, which, like, the other people are in the room. Guys,
yeah.
they can see you.
And also, nobody should be in the same room as anybody in this situation.
No.
Period. Like, even if criminal charges aren't going to be filed. So, no.
No. We had, like, a kind of tense mortgage closing on this house, and we were kept in separate rooms, and that was about a house.
Yeah. The last time I closed on a house, they like went to another country and left their attorneys to just sign for them, which I think is the smart thing to do, frankly. Like, just don't be in the room. Shit can get snitty.
Especially in New York when there's like 7,000 pages to sign.
Yeah. Like, just send someone with a stamp who's a notary who, like, who cares? Life's too short. Anyway.
Anyway. After consulting, Terry's lawyer says they will take the offer as long as it's paid in a lump sum within 24 hours. And what do you know? They already have a check, and Alicia's handing it over while Terry watches lustily. But at the last second, Peter snatches it away, saying he can't do it. Clip 13.
You have to.
This is blackmail, Michael.
If you don't give us that money, I'll...
What? No. Go ahead. You'll what? Take me to court? Fine. You want to take the gloves off, honey? Let's go. Because you don't have 1 ounce of proof that I slept with your nympho daughter. And for your information, I don't find her or you even remotely attractive.
You son of a bitch. Just get a grip.
Sorry, Alicia. But my integrity is not for sale.
Ha ha! Yes.
Peter!
Dr. Burns is obviously too upset to proceed, but I'm very confident that we can come to terms once he calms down.
Yeah, I'll prescribe some Valium. He'll be fine.
Well, he damn well better proceed. Because each day I don't get a check, the price goes up $100,000. Come on, honey. That woman's gonna eat your partner alive. Unless whoever slept with that little girl on the beach comes forward, I suggest you look for a new practice to join.
Guys. Please let this end.
Yeah. They also have Brandy, like, trace her finger across Michael's cheek as she walks out, which, like, no one notices.
This is a minor child. Gross. Please stop.
Please stop. In the park, Kimberly stoops over a water fountain to wash down her pills, and when she stands up, she's Betsy, telling Kimberly not to take her pills. Kimberly immediately answers Betsy back that Peter wants her to, but the scene ends before we see what happens. And then Amanda's late to a meeting with Sydney, but hands over $200 to find out where the Carsons are staying. And when Peter gets back to his office, Kimberly rushes into his arms and sobs that she's hearing voices again, but it's different this time. And he's trying to calm her down, but before he can, cops burst in and arrest him for unlawful sexual intercourse and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. And this is not a funny plot line, but Kimberly's reaction is hilarious. Clip 14.
No, please. He's my doctor. He promised to help me, please. You can't take him.
Yeah, the cops don't care.
Also, apparently Terry was just like, well, that plan's probably not going to work. So, like, didn't you want to wait, actually, and, like, rack up the price before you call the cops?
Yeah.
Unless someone else called the cops, which that's not what happened.
Yeah.
No one wants this plot line.
So the next morning, Michael's pacing on the deck when the phone rings. He picks it up, barking Kimberly's name, but it's Sydney. And Sydney does not care that Kimberly did not come home the night before because she's calling to tell Michael about Peter getting arrested. And Michael is shocked. And then Amanda goes looking for the Carsons' room, but Michael has beaten her there. And Amanda ducks into a doorway and watches as Brandy comes out and drapes herself all over Michael before Michael pushes her back inside and says that she and Terry need to come clean. Cut to the beach house where Kimberly's in the bedroom pacing as she says she's not going to let Betsy win. She has a hammer in her hand that she's kind of idly playing with. And Michael comes home just then, calling out that he has something he needs to talk to her about. But as soon as he has crossed through the doorway, Betsy hammers him on the back of the head and he falls onto the bed and then the floor. And Betsy says, Betsy won. Will Michael live this time? Spoiler, yes. That's where we leave it for this week.
He will. We'll get into it.
Yeah. I mean, Thomas Calabro's done more episodes of the show than any other actor. So, of course, he lives. He's got to live to the very bitter end.
Yeah. Bitter for whom?
I assume it's bitter. I actually haven't seen that season or really much of the show at all. So it's all new to me. Let us close it up by naming our episode MVP. Allison staying above the fray.
Yep. And her hair looks really good recently.
Yes,
also.
Her hair does look very good. Least valuable player.
Dick.
Yeah. I mean, Richard's bad and Terry's also bad. So let's just say everyone who is trying to get their way through sexual assault.
Through, yes. That's not how we do it.
Mm-mm.
Next time on Again With This, Amanda saves Peter's bacon, Kimberly gives Michael the boot, Joe trades dates for deets, and a whole bunch of sweeps. Death gets the show in under the salary cap. Will you be able to get in under the daily dosage cap for Visine after peeping our visual aids? I don't know, but I do know that you can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. Or bring your script notes on over to our Patreon page. There's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. You will find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm headstone monologuist Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Sybil Case Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Sticky Kid David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Go home, you condescending bitch, and we'll let you know what we think.
Okay.